As the news of coronavirus reverberates throughout the world, we at HRN are especially concerned about how coronavirus will impact our food system. We will use our platform to support the restaurant, agriculture, hospitality, and other food-related industries by maintaining our coverage and operations. As social distancing becomes the temporary norm, podcasts are more important than ever. There's never been a more crucial time to stay informed about the state of our food system and the ways that food connects our global community. We're sharing all of our COVID-19 coverage at heritageradionetwork.org/COVID-19, from interviews with nonprofit leaders and journalists, to firsthand accounts from chefs and restaurant owners, to reports on how this crisis is affecting regional farms. Our team is working remotely from all over to keep Food Radio alive. HRN needs your support more than ever to keep sharing essential stories and resources with our listeners. Make a donation of any amount. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague.
I'm Greg Benson.
Hey, Greg. How you doing today, bud?
I'm good. I'm coming to you all live from my apartment in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We're going remote with Heritage Radio Network in response to COVID-19 because nobody can go fucking anywhere. So how are you doing, man?
I'm in the same boat. I'm sitting here at Studio 3A, my apartment in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And, you know, talking to you without seeing your face, which makes it a little bit, choppy. But we're gonna muscle through this thing and get some good content out for our listeners today.
Absolutely, we both have good faces for radio, so there should be a slam dunk for us.
Yeah, no difference there. We're still invisible to the audience, but I feel like it's strange to not be able to see each other. Right, it makes for a difficult conversation, but we're all adjusting to that right now. You know, been doing a lot of phone calls with people. Been doing a lot of I'm not into the FaceTime thing or the what's the thing, house party that everyone's doing. I don't cotton to that sort of video chatting thing too well, but I've been on the phone more in the past 2 weeks than I've probably been in the past 2 years. I don't know if that's how you're keeping in touch with people, but that's how I'm touching base.
Absolutely, man. I've been doing a lot of that. I've been doing a lot of Facebook chat. I've had a weird thing happen to me. I mentioned this a little bit in last week's show, but I've started doing an online trivia group with some people that I used to work with in DC. And this is, I am president in good standing of the "I will leave a bar when trivia is about to start" club. But, you know, it's all about reaching out and making sure that you can stay in touch with people, you know, not just for business, but, you know, I'm not a big fan of talking to people on the phone, but I've been doing that a crap load this week, not just, you know, to keep busy and keep businesses alive, but just to call people around the country and around the world and just go, Hey, how are you? Like that's a real question for once. How are you doing? You know?
Yeah. And I think it's also, it kind of just feels good to go back to the, what has become kind of an old school methodology. You know, I think I used to, you know, live and die by reaching out to my friends on the telephone, and then it became just texting, and then it became social media. And then weirdly we drift further and further away. So it's been pretty good for me to be on the phone with people over the past couple of weeks,
yeah.
saving my sanity a little bit.
Yeah. You have to, if you can't see people in person, it's, you know, we're a social species. We have to find ways to reach out. And I do in a weird way, find it comforting that we're reverting, you know, we've gone further and further down this trail because for whatever reason, as our technology improved, we wanted to keep our friends at a further and further distance away from us. But now that we can't see them in person, it's nice to know that we're not just still, you know, only commenting on their Instagram videos. We're kind of bringing them back into our lives, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've seen a lot more interaction on all of my social platforms as well, though, just from people who maybe aren't my personal friends, but people who are my guests or my friends through the bar. I did an Ask Me Anything on my Instagram.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. I went 24 hours because I just left it up there and I answered over 100 questions. It was pretty interesting and pretty engaging with my audience, which makes me feel a little bit better, you know, because it's been over 2 weeks now since I've been behind the bar facing human beings and serving them drinks. which is an unusual place to be for people like us.
Yeah. I'm making a lot more, anytime I make a big pot of coffee, I go to the roommates. I'm like, anybody want anything? Anybody? You sure? You sure I can't get anybody anything? I'm jonesing for it, man. I'm jonesing for that need to be.
Yeah. You're like, so just the check then?
I'll just leave this here for you whenever you're ready.
Yeah. Yeah. You let me know. Well, in our sort of virtual studio today, we've got a returning guest and dear friend, Natasha David from Nightcap, and you're up at your country home outside the city. So you've got some social distancing built right in with where you live. Welcome to the studio, Natasha.
Thanks, everyone. Hi.
So good to have you back.
Nice to be back, given the strange circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, we're all chuckling and laughing and, you know, that's a good sign. I think it means our spirits are up and it means that we're, you know, healthy at least throughout this ordeal. So tell us a little bit about, like, let's kick us off a little bit with how everything has changed for you right now during all this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from a personal aspect, I am very fortunate in that I live, 2 hours out of the city. I actually live with my mom, as well as my two kids and my husband. And my mom is sort of target COVID-19, risk factor. She's 78. She's got a chronic respiratory problem. You know, we started paying attention to things quite early on. In addition to that, also, I have my father who lives in Rome. You know, I've been obviously paying close attention to, you know, everything that's been happening, maybe a little bit earlier than other people started looking into it. And, you know, you try not to be a hypochondriac about things and you try to remain calm. And, you know, I don't think any of us could have foreseen how drastic this all could have gotten. Very early on, I started, you know, just telling my staff, wash your hands more often. You know, we touch people's glasses. Make sure you're not, you know, make sure you're definitely not putting your hands into anyone's used glass. And then, you know, things as the news got more serious, it was like, okay, we're going to stop using straws. I don't want you touching anyone's straws. And now we're going to stop garnishing because I don't want anybody maybe, you know, eating a lime wedge and then you're picking it up and then you get the germs. And
wow. Yeah. You're the first person I heard who eliminated garnishing cocktails. That's crazy.
That was actually my incredible manager, Serene. That was her idea. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And then, you know, obviously towards the sort of last week of service things, you know, business had dropped significantly. And by Saturday the 14th, I was having a conversation with Alex and Dave and saying, do we think it's socially responsible for us to still be open? Are we doing the right thing? Not just for our guests, but, you know, for our staff, are we putting them in harm's way?
Right. And that's your partners, Alex Day and Dave Kaplan of Gin and Luck and, Umbrella Company for Death & Co. and all that, right?
Yeah. So by Sunday afternoon, we had decided that it didn't feel right to be open. We didn't want to encourage people leaving their homes. I think at that point, obviously business had dropped that weekend, but I was kind of surprised by our sales. And kind of, I guess, a little upset even that they were as high as they were, because people were clearly not taking it very seriously. And I think there was so much information out there that made us all feel like, oh, well, in our age group, we don't really need to think about it. And I think people didn't quite understand that they were just essentially becoming carriers, right?
Exactly.
Well, I think it was a hard thing to get a scope of, like, the immediacy of the threat, you know? I kind of think it made me think about this thing I read a while ago about climate change, how as a species we're built to react to, holy shit, there's a tiger, I got to run away. We're not built to react to, okay, a tiger's going to be here in about 20 years, so you should start planning now, you know?
Yeah. Well,
it sounds like you were one of the smart ones. It sounds like you were doing what everybody's saying we should have done, which is, you know, take this seriously and put precautions in place and keep yourself appraised of it way before it has a chance to become a problem.
I mean, I guess yes and no. I mean, it's like at the same time, I want to be able to, you know, why do we do what we do, right? We're in this business because we enjoy creating community, right? We enjoy inviting people into this other space that we have and creating a sense of home for them. We want to, we like to nurture people. And, you know, historically in New York, and New York in itself has been a city that has experienced so many different traumas, right?
Of course, yeah.
The bar and the restaurant, but very much the bar, continued during all of those times to be a meeting point, right, for people to come and gather and recollect and make connections with their loved ones and their friends. So it felt, I kind of felt like I was in some ways doing the wrong thing, because that service I feel like is very necessary. I'm glad we're closed, obviously, but you know,
it's a lot of inner conflict. I understand exactly what you mean. You know, we've spent our entire lives and careers building places where people gather and commune. Mm-hmm. And this is historically the place of the, you know, the pub, the public house, the bar. You know, this is, you know, suddenly we're having to buck our own best instinct, which is, you know, gather together and be strong together. And suddenly now we have to sort of separate and try and be strong together, which is certainly a new paradigm for us to even think about. Sounds like you pulled the trigger on shutting the bar down at least one day prior to the city telling us we had to. You said Saturday was your last service, and Sunday was the day that the mayor or the governor shut us down, right?
He shut us down on Tuesday.
Oh, was it Tuesday?
Yeah, so it was a couple days later. Yeah.
Yeah, I closed early as well. My last service was Sunday. I could have sworn it was Monday, but I think maybe you're right. It was Tuesday midnight, I think is what they said, right?
Just in time for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, two weeks ago. Seems like a billion years, you know, having spent so much time just sitting here in my apartment. I've barely really left. Natasha, have you guys taken up any of these opportunities that the government has offered us? Are you doing any to go or takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, there, so many of them. There's so much fine print that I actually feel like I'm not prepared enough to speak to them quite yet. But yes, we are actively applying for all loans with the guidance of our accountant and our lawyers. So. TBD.
Yeah, well, I do want to talk about that a little bit more if we can, maybe in the second half. But I was more referring to, like, are you doing any to-go cocktails? Are you, you know, doing delivery or pickup at the bar?
We're not. I think sort of the main reason for us is, again, I live 2 hours away. Mm. I'm in complete isolation because I don't want to get my mom sick in any way, shape or form. Right. And to the point that we've stocked up on groceries for a month. We're literally not trying to leave our house.
You got like a compound going.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like I felt weird asking somebody else on staff, to put themselves at risk. Mm-hmm. No one has reached out to me on my staff asking if they could be in charge of it. So, you know, I'm kind of going off the assumption that they feel the same way.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know how, if the risk is worth the payoff.
Well, I mean, I can speak to that a little bit. We're doing to-go and delivery cocktails out of Amore Amargo, and starting this, we were closed entirely today and tomorrow, Sunday and Monday, and starting this week, we'll probably cut down to just doing this project on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Mm-hmm. The reward isn't that great. I do feel that part of me that wants to give a service is probably the strongest pull. The juice isn't worth the squeeze, really. We're not we're not making enough revenue. It's kind of busy work. It's just sort of keeping my hands busy and keeping my mind a little bit busy, and making me feel like I'm, you know, delivering a service to some people who need it and or want it. Sure. But yeah, I think largely that's the kind of consensus I'm getting from my other friends and our colleagues in the neighborhood and in New York who are doing the same thing. It's not really, this is no means to, you know, this isn't even a bucket for bailing out the boat as it goes down. Yeah. We're polishing the brass on the Titanic.
Well, it's just, I mean, I wonder, I mean, my bar just did shots of mezcal and beer. So obviously there's not a big takeout market there. But I wonder how much of it is just kind of, just to keep, like, it feels almost like a medically induced coma, you know, just to make sure that there's still a heartbeat there that we can be revived mm-hmm. from later. But yeah, exactly. It's a tiny bucket to bail out a very big hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just keep going back to the risk factors. I don't want to expose people. I don't want to encourage people leaving their homes, you know?
Right. Well, there's, of course, you don't want to expose anyone, and you don't want to get exposed. And that's the thing, right? This pretty insidious disease doesn't rear its head maybe until 7 to 14 days after you've been exposed. Right. You're not even aware that you have it or that you're carrying it or that you might be exposing someone else. Yeah, it's pretty brutal. We're right at around the 15-minute mark, so let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. We're going to come back and keep talking to Natasha while she's up at her compound. We'll talk about how she's living off solar energy.
Ooh.
When we come back.
The James Beard Foundation is a nonprofit with the mission to celebrate, nurture, and honor chefs and other leaders, making America's food culture more delicious, diverse, and sustainable for everyone. And right now, it's working to respond to the dire situation the food and beverage community is in due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Restaurants, bars, and other independent food and beverage operations are often on the front lines of community revival. The majority of culinary community businesses have less than 500 employees, but collectively this industry generates $1 trillion a year, 60% of which is pumped back into their local business communities. To help bring swift economic relief to these essential businesses, the James Beard Foundation launched a fund to provide microgrants to independent food and beverage businesses in need. You can donate at jamesbeard.org/relief.
And we're back on the Speakeasy in our remote situation. I'm at my apartment in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. Greg's at his apartment in Bushwick. And Natasha David's on the line with us from, I don't even know, where are you, Natasha?
I'm in Red Hook, New York, upstate.
Red Hook, New York, upstate. 2 hours, you said, away from the city. 2 hours via train or car?
Car and train. Kind of the same idea.
The train doesn't save you any time?
Not really.
Typical.
That's how you know it's upstate.
Yeah, exactly. The train makes no difference.
Cars can move fast up there.
So you're holed up in your compound with your family, which includes your husband.
Make him sound like I live on a compound.
Well,
if it gets really bad, she's moving to the bunker.
Yeah. Well, you're up there with your two very small children, lovely children, your husband and your mother. Mm-hmm. Who you mentioned earlier is in a couple of at-risk factors for this crazy-ass disease. So you've decided to pretty much, and you said you have a month's worth of groceries on hand. Mm-hmm. I know from following your husband's Instagram, you've got some solar panels, so maybe you're running off grid. I don't know. You guys are becoming those people, the survivors, which is amazing. So what sort of, like, I don't know, emotions are you feeling regarding having to have closed your business now for two weeks, 2 weeks today, right? You closed on Saturday night, so 2 weeks today. How are you feeling, like, personally?
That's a big question. Well, you know, we made the decision, and I obviously had to lay off my staff. Yeah. And as an employer, I think and as somebody who knows every single member on their staff because it's a small team, that is incredibly difficult. It was the right thing to do. And I, you know, laid them off immediately because I wanted everybody to have an opportunity to apply for unemployment. And then I actually let the bar sit untouched for 5 days because I'd been reading different articles as to how long these, you know, germs can live on various surfaces.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I let it basically self-disinfect, and then I decided to drive down to the city and on my own because I couldn't be in contact with anybody else, clean the bar out. And, you know, if there's ever been a time where I wanted to be surrounded by my staff, it was that day. It was, you know, it was really awful. Being alone in your bar, which is, you know, you've put so much time and love and energy and thought and care and anger and frustration, all of those things are, you know, what make your bar what it is. And it's a bar that also has sort of had many ups and downs. And so I felt very defeated, to be honest with you, when I was in there alone, you know, getting rid of everything and pulling bottles off the back shelf so that in case, you know, you start thinking about, oh, what if there's riots, you know?
Yeah.
So what do I want to save? So, you know, putting everything away and I, you know, taking the POSs with me and, you know, turning the ice machines off and the gas lines off, you know, it was really heartbreaking.
Yeah. It's also, I think, worth noting that, you know, we have obviously many hours of every single day where the bar is completely empty and totally ours when they're by ourselves. But there's always the notion that it's going to reopen tomorrow or next service is upon us. So yeah, I feel kind of in a similar way. I've been to my bars and done kind of the same thing and looking around while I'm standing there alone and thinking, I didn't build this room to be not full of people.
Sure.
It's a very like hollow feeling.
Yeah, that's a very good way to describe it. It was very hollow.
Yeah.
And very lonely. It was very lonely.
Yeah, and you mentioned, and we can definitely touch on this as well. You mentioned that bar has been through, your bar has been through some turbulent times already. You know, when we had you on last, we talked about how your bar had to relocate, and that was a big arduous endeavor. So, like, I feel like you've been through more than the typical emotional pendulum that we all go through. You've had to.
Well, I don't want to say that my grief is bigger than anyone else's in any
way. Well, no, but I just mean the swing has been maybe wider.
Sure. Okay. I will take that.
I mean, you know, we have a mutual neighbor just on the corner from where you are and just down the street from where I'm at, Black Crescent, you know, and yeah. I realized, you
we
know,
there the other day.
Yeah. Reynolds, you know, his bar opened and then burned and had to close and reopened. And now he's closed again, you know, and he's trying to be chipper on his Instagram, posting things like, you know, we'll reopen, third time's the charm. So, you know, it's difficult for any of us to have to go through this.
Yeah. No, my husband's bar too is Donna. So
of course. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like,
I feel like the solace that I'm finding, is that, you know, we're all in this together.
Absolutely.
So like that part I can at least be like, well, if only some of us are fucked, then that makes it an imbalance, but we're kind of all fucked. So we're all fucked together. So that kind of levels the field and we'll all just get through it together.
Well, and according to
the hashtag for this whole moment, together, right? All fucked together.
Well, and also, I mean, like you said about it being a community, that's been one of the, I don't know. I'm not one for silver linings or blessings in disguise. You know, the real blessing would have been if this never fucking happened in the first place. But it has been, it was inspiring to see how on day one, there were so many organizations popping up offering aid and assistance. And I think it was even within like 48 hours of all the bars in New York City closing that Jameson pledged what, $500,000 to the USBG relief fund.
Yeah.
It's been, yeah. I mean, because we're all fucked together, there is a sense of, you know, that it's, you look and you see that the community is still alive, and helping each other out, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And speaking of help, I wanted to talk a little bit about something that's making its way through the New York State Senate right now. It's a bill called S
8125. It is, I've got it pulled up right here. It relates to suspending rent payments for certain residential tenants and small business commercial tenants and certain mortgage payments for 90 days in response to the outbreak of COVID-19, which translates to, and I think this is where I need to say, full disclaimer, none of us here are lawyers or have law degrees, unless you've been holding out on me, Souther. But it is something that...
Wrong kind of bar.
Yeah, exactly. What do you mean pass the bar? I pass the bar every night on my way home from work. But it is something that's making its way through the New York legislature right now that seems like it offers some form of relief. Essentially, it would, to my novice layperson reading of it, offers a waiver of rent for 3 months for qualifying individuals and small businesses, and then would offer the people who they would pay that rent to a break on their mortgages. It is at nysenate.gov, and it is currently open for public comment if anyone wants to go and leave some thoughts about it right there. But since I have you guys here right now, what are you all's thoughts on this?
Well, this is the very first step. I mean, it's the most obvious step.
Of course.
You know, no one can pay their rent if they don't have revenue coming in. It only makes sense for the landlords to suspend rent. But of course, I understand that the landlords have mortgages and that their mortgages need to be suspended for the time being as well. Now, I actually don't know if mortgages for commercial, if commercial mortgages have been delayed. I know that for me as a somebody who owns an apartment, I asked to have my mortgage delayed, and it is, I don't have to pay it for 90 days.
I mean, at least that's some relief, you know?
Yeah. That's not commercial, but, you know, that's huge, right? I don't have to pay those thousands of dollars right now because I don't have income coming in. So, for businesses, this is the lifeline, right? This is what's going to keep us afloat, is not having to go into debt over these rent bills. And I don't know how different landlords are reacting. And I understand that everybody's trying to look out for themselves right now. But, you know, I've written my landlord, and as of right now, they still sent me a rent bill. So right now I'm still scheduled to, or at least they're expecting me to pay my rent on the 1st.
And that's for the bar.
That's for the bar. Yes, correct. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. Same boat for us. Landlord's still expecting us to pay rent. My apartment here in Brooklyn. I'm not an owner. I'm just a renter. My rent slip was slid underneath my door, just as it always is on Friday morning. Mm-hmm. When I woke up, it was there. So they're expecting rent as well. You know, and we've taken in, you know, pretty much a zero sum gain really of revenue since 2 weeks ago. We've reached out to all of our landlords to talk to them about, you know, rent abatement or possibly amortizing some rent, you know, maybe getting them to negotiate 3 months of non-rent payment, but then folding that amount back into our rent for a year, you know, or possibly even 2 years. But we're also finding maybe a little glimmer of hope in that some of the landlords seem to be amenable to the notion of not only doing this abatement or other methodology, but they seem to be amenable to the idea of lowering our rent in general, because they see that they see that if we fail, then we'll leave. And given the current economic status and the status that's going to be when this finally passes, there may not be anyone who wants to get in and take that space for a length of time. So better for them to lower the rent and hold on to tenants who've been with them for years than to keep the rent at the same rate and possibly have no tenant for several years. So, you know,
Souther, on that note, I feel like it's also important to talk about what business will maybe look like for all of us as bars when this is quote unquote over, right?
I'm ridiculously nervous about that, and I'm sure you are as well. I think that consumer confidence is going to be rattled. You know, especially, okay, let's assume, you know, Nightcap is it's a semi-subterranean bar. It's pretty tight. It's got a low ceiling. It's very cozy. I love it there. You love it there. You made that place your own. My bar is 240 square feet. It's super tiny. Greg, your bar, we've discussed, may in fact be even smaller than Amore Margo. I think it's going to be a couple of, you know, long beats before the consumer says to themselves, I want to go back into a tightly packed room.
But not even the consumer. I mean, as a business owner, we have to start thinking about, is it responsible to have packed bars, right? I mean,
right.
I don't know about you, but I don't make my rent money on a lovely, slow Monday night where I leisurely have guests come in and out. I make my rent payments on Fridays and Saturday nights when I pack my bar full of people to a point that my server has a hard time walking through to their guests, right? So, that's how I pay my rent, is on those 2 days.
Of course.
So I think there's going to have to be an entire restructuring. And then, not to, you know, sound apocalyptic, but then there's a lot of talk now in the news about how everything will kind of calm down in the summer. And then in the fall, it's going to come back with a vengeance. So does that mean there's going to be another shutdown?
Historically, we've seen that with other viruses in the past. So yeah, this is certainly something that's on all of our minds. Oh, are we going to stumble back to our feet and start walking again and then get smacked down? You know, like,
yeah.
It's super nerve-wracking, and again, I don't want to get on the fear-mongering or hysteria or apocalyptic thinking either. However, it's not something we can't at least put on the whiteboard and say it's a point of, you know, it's a point we have to think of.
Yeah.
Well, I also wonder if there's going to be. I heard something. It was a Planet Money or something about this being a V-shaped recession, where, you know, it dips sharply, and then because people are cooped up for so long, like you said, people also, you know, it could be the opposite. People could be clamoring. The cabin fever could set in, and they could really want to go out. And then it's on us as responsible proprietors to say, how much do we want to allow people back in the space? How much do we want to ratchet people in? Like, do we want to do it gradually? Do we want to, I feel like just opening the doors and being like, come and get it, it would be irresponsible.
It doesn't feel right. Exactly. It doesn't feel right. So again, it is in the landlord's best interest to lower rents, because they will have empty storefronts. It's just, you know, it's just what's going to happen.
Right. I feel like it's going to be the second wave or third wave. I don't know what wave we're on, but you know, if we're suffering now, then landlords are going to suffer later if they don't, come to some sort of like reasonable, places with people, small businesses like us who maybe can't weather, 2 weeks is a lot to take in no revenue. When you live on such thin margins as, our business typically does.
Mm-hmm. And who knows how long this is going to go on for.
Right. That's the uncertainty, right? Like, at least when we had Sandy roll through, the hurricane that hit New York City, we kind of, you know, we knew there's an end, right? We can see the end. It's coming. Even as far back as 9/11, like, you know, we will rebuild. We know, you know, we can sort of project how long that'll take. I feel like with this thing, we don't have any sense of its ending or, you know, when we can go back to quote unquote normal, which I don't think we'll be back to normal in the sense that we had, you know, even just 2 weeks ago or a month ago. I think this is going to take years.
I know. I mean, this is what I was talking about with my husband last night. You know, we were even just talking about sending our kids to school. Like, how is that going to look different?
Right. Neither of your babies are old enough for school yet, right? So they haven't even been yet.
My 3-year-old is in daycare. So he's out of daycare, obviously, now. But, you know, that's a lot of little kids in a room.
Right. Kids are inherently messy, and they're also not so conscious of, you know, not touching their face and stuff like that. Yeah. No fault of theirs.
It's going to really be incredibly interesting to see how this will completely reshape the way we live our lives. And on that note, I mean, I also think it's very important to acknowledge how actually fucking lucky we are that this is our disaster, that we're not, you know, this is, some people are calling this, you know, like our world war, our generation's world war. The fact that we get to sit at home and watch Netflix while, you know, sort of things fall apart is...
Yeah. Yeah, the courage to stay at home is what people are saying.
Yeah,
right. a little bit of a different courage.
It's with me. I get to have my family with me. You know, I get to know that they're safe.
Well, sure, and we can certainly, be thankful and grateful of the notion that we are here in, you know, New York City, or even in the United States, or even, you know, our sort of side of the world. You know, India has mandated stay at home.
Just a 3-week lockdown, basically.
Yeah. Shelter in place. Yeah. And you know, you have to understand that like a lot of the parts of this issue, that are going to mean, frankly, literally life and death for some people is privilege. And when you think of a country like India, that's so poor that people are already, you know, in large numbers, people are already maybe suffering from, you know, poverty, starvation, et cetera, things like that. To then be locked into their homes where maybe they don't have, you know, running water at all, or if they do, maybe it isn't clean, or they don't have refrigeration, so they can't stock up food to last that long. You know, like there's lots of pieces to the puzzle that, you know, just by virtue of where we are, we're a lot more, I hate to say better off, but we're in a better position.
We're in a very privileged position. Yeah.
Privileged is the word. Yeah. I mean, I'm thankful to be trapped in my pretty well-appointed apartment in New York City, you know?
Yeah.
As odd and fucked up as it all is, things could be measurably and visibly worse.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, and that's something that I think we all have to keep in mind as we
move forward on this and rebuild, is like, you know, how could I work towards making this better, and how, at least for me, could it, you know, potentially have been worse? And just kind of, you know, keep a lot of things in perspective. It's really kind of the only way to, I think, you know, empathy is what's going to get us through this, essentially, is seeing not just how this affects me, but how my behavior could affect others. I think that's why we've all seen the photos from spring break in Tampa, and I look at that and I just see like a catastrophic failure of empathy, you know?
But yeah. There was a story of a 52-year-old man who lives with his elderly parents and takes care of them. And his son was going to go to Sal Padre Island, Texas for spring break. And he told him over and over, don't go, don't go, don't go. The son foolishly went anyway. And when the son came back home, the dad said, I simply cannot let you back in the house. So locked his own son out, you know, like, I can't endanger my parents. I can't endanger myself. You've probably contaminated yourself. Like, empathy, but combined with a world that's, you know, in a lot of ways, largely stupid, but, you know, simply uneducated and foolish, you know, and, you know, we keep, our own administration keeps pounding this drum of the notion that, you know, America is a free country and we should be able to be free. Well, you know, this virus doesn't give a shit if we're free or in a cell. You know, it's coming at us if we're not careful. So I don't know.
Absolutely.
I think one thing I really do just want to quickly mention, even though it's a huge subject, is that the sort of, if you want to say, quote unquote, positive that is coming out of this for our industry in particular, is that I hope that by the end of all of this, we as a industry, and an industry that, you know, thrives on being hospitable, starts being more hospitable with its own, right? So this is an opportunity for us to all sit around and try to figure out, like, how do we give people sick leave? Like, how are we as small businesses going to make this happen? Because we have to. We have to have sick leave. We have to be able to offer, we have to have health insurance for our employees. There needs to be more of a support structure. And you know, I'm a small business. I don't have any of those things in place for my employees, because I simply can't afford it. So how do we restructure things so that we can start doing this? And I know Ashton Berry is doing all kinds of wonderful things. I've been sort of reading little snippets of some stuff she's doing, and there's little talks, you know, all over sort of on social media. So this is a moment for us. We should take this time that, you know, we suddenly have on our hands, mm-hmm. To try and really delve into this and think about it and look at our numbers and look at, you know, who knows what our numbers will look like when we reopen, but to look at our structures and really take care of each other. You know, we have to.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a forest fire, you know, it's going to burn a lot of things down, but out of that, there's a chance to rebuild some stuff, some structures better than it was before. You know, I mean, it's this conversation about healthcare for, you know, the people who serve your food and the people who drive your Ubers isn't just an abstract for a large chunk of the population anymore. It's front page news.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of dangers of the mundane, unfortunately for everybody, I have to apologize. I'm doing this on a borrowed laptop that is about to die. So
right.
We might have to wrap this up now a few minutes early. Sorry to everybody out there for the technical difficulties.
I think that's quite all right. I think we've pretty much come to a pretty solid conclusion on this somewhat, I don't know, sobering episode of The Speakeasy. Want to thank again, Natasha David, for being on again. You're always a delightful guest to be on the show, and you've always got a great perspective.
My thoughts are all jumbled and I'm not expressing myself and my words are not there. And it's just, you know, it's a very emotional and confusing time.
You are in good company on that one.
Yeah, I think everybody listening wants to hear, you know, I know from audience feedback that we get all the time, people enjoy the fact that our show is typically, you know, pretty real, and they get to hear, you know, the truth from us. So hearing the truth in your voice and hearing the truth in your words is certainly something that is appreciated from me, and I'm sure the audience as well. Again, that's going to be the end of this episode of The Speakeasy. I thank you both for being in the virtual studio with us, and thank you to Jeet, who's our HRN engineer, who's doing this from afar as well and keeping himself safe as well. Wash your hands, stay safe, and cheers. We'll talk to you next week.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to the Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like. Tell your friends. And please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.